ABC Radio Australia.
Now, do you sometimes want what your neighbour has? While envy may not help in some circumstances, it can prove quite useful when it comes to conservation efforts. According to a study in Fiji, Indigenous-led marine conservation in one area may have motivated nearby neighbours to set up similar projects, and according to the researchers, that is a win for the environment. Dubravka Volodia spoke to Dr. Arundhati Jagadish, who did research in Fiji through Conservation International while she was a scientist at the organisation.
What we found was there were so many clusters where adoptions were happening much closer in space and time. So we started looking at whether neighbors played a role. So we charted this graph to understand whether an adopter of an LMMA had a previous adopter who was a neighbor. And we found that over 70% of our adopters had neighbors who were previous adopters, which is really interesting. And I think kind of intuitive in a lot of ways, because we learn so much from our neighbors or our peer network. And so we started with that investigation to see whether neighborhoods had effects. And then we tried to explain what the reasons were. What we didn't do in the study, and we hope, you know, this encourages others to take this on, is to see whether we can establish that these neighborhood effects had a direct influence on adoption. And so understanding the network effects and seeing whether neighbors were speaking to other neighbors, and this is what drove the process. So we haven't established the causality for neighbor-to-neighbor adoption, but we know there is a relationship.
You said you looked at the possible reasons. What were the reasons?
So the factors that we found significant were, one, that people, you know, saw some benefits to adopting. So there's this idea that villages were perceiving some benefit of being part of the network. The chiefly status, which we also learned was one of the strategies in which the network works. So, you know, Fiji has a very traditional hierarchical system. And so if you first approach the chiefly village, it makes it easy for you to reach other villages in the same manua. We also found that distance to tourism hotspots played a role. Again, villages that were further away from tourist hotspots were more likely to be LMMA adopters. And then, some of them also had these Yambula committees, which are resource management committees. And if they had them at the district level, they were more likely to be adopters. Presence of NGOs played a big role. So if you worked with an NGO before and, you know, the NGO was working in the area, they would help you set up this LMMA. So that was a significant factor. And one of the most, commonly studied is this idea of trust. So if the villagers trusted where they got their information from and generally had a trust in like government bodies and nonprofits, they were more likely to be adopters.
If we talk about Indigenous-led conservation, what sort of areas are we talking about? And how does it differ from more traditional conservation?
Traditional conservation can also be of many different forms, right? Historically, conservation was seen as a very preservationist concept. So there were protected areas. There were areas that were considered, wilderness areas. So there were no humans in them. But there are also other more open conservation areas where communities are managing resources, either with support from or sometimes by themselves through other like organizations. And those are mostly like community-based resource management areas. There are indigenous-led, take on a different significance because there's a lot of, questions of stewardship and access and rights over resources. Historically, they have been marginalized away from these spaces. And so areas where indigenous people and local communities have control of, rights to access, rights to harvest resources, those would classify as indigenous areas or indigenous-led resource management areas. And so while there is merit in, recognition of these systems that also play a big role in biodiversity conservation, and now people are studying, how they help mitigate climate change, from an environmental justice perspective, by themselves, there is merit in looking into these systems. So we were only looking at locally managed marine areas. And the Pacific has a long history of customary marine resource management, over hundreds of years. over time, they have degraded through, you know, colonization and things like that. So there's this idea that recognition and stewardship and access and rights, how do you formalize them? And so the locally managed marine areas concept was basically understanding this kind of plural governance that emerges in these systems. So, you know, they are indigenous led, but also supported in many different ways through support organizations that we studied in this paper. But also as they operate, there are, you know, government regulations on fisheries that kind of apply to them. So they work in this kind of rural space, which makes it really interesting.
And now, for, you know, some of our listeners might hear what we are talking about and might be interested mm-hmm. perhaps as well in taking up their own conservation, their own marine conservation effort. What sort of advice would you have for them? How can they get started?
I think learning from others, your neighbors, your friends, you know, this kind of social learning, I think, is extremely important and would be valuable for anyone looking at these kinds of systems.